cozy 3D decor. Her eyes went wide. I haven't been there in ages, and when I went, I was drunk. Do you plan to get drunk today, too, Ian?
No, I've never been there, so I want to see it sober.
You've never been?
Nope.
Then let's go. She shifted the car into reverse and backed out of the lot, smiling as if he'd given her a diamond ring. He'd put that smile on her face, which made his chest fill with the heady fizz of joy. 4 voodoo donuts and 2 legitimate belly laughs into the afternoon, Ian stared at Gentry as she lined up her putt. Her white shirt glowed under the black lights of the indoor miniature golf facility, a 3D neon extravaganza that must have been designed by someone in the middle of a psychedelic hallucination.
Were you ever that wild, Ian?
Hmm?
He picked up his ball and followed her to the next hole.
Those boys, running and laughing.
She pointed in the direction of a birthday party of energetic 10-year-olds circling one another on a nearby hole where a few mothers failed to keep them organized.
I'm trying to picture you that way, but I can't. I can only see you like you are now.
In other words, boring? She chuckled. Well, we wouldn't have been co-conspirators, that's for sure.
She lined up a shot and took it. He looked at the eager boys, joking with each other, some vying for a sort of leadership role, others more interested in unwrapping candy than playing golf.
I was pretty quiet. An only child, spent a lot of time with adults.
I hated grown-ups.
She paused to putt.
And I wasn't quiet.
You weren't an only kid, either.
Kind of was.
She picked up her ball after sinking it in the cup.
At least I got to run around with neighborhood kids instead of being dragged to my parents' work, like you were.
You probably had big birthday bashes, like that boy, too.
He lined up his shot, but it hit the purple fin obstacles and went sideways.
You didn't?
Not in our budget. I'd have a few neighborhood kids over. Duncan Hines cake. No gifts.
Gentry's eyes grew as round as the donuts they'd devoured.
Why no gifts?
My birthday is December 16th. I think my parents worried I'd get something that Santa had already bought, so they'd tell parents to have their kids make something or bring candy.
Gentry tossed up her orange ball and caught it.
I had huge birthday parties with all the bells and whistles, petting zoos, bounce houses, kids from the whole grade. My mom would busy herself with the parents. My dad manned the grill. Colby and Alec would sit off to the side, counting the minutes until they could go join their friends somewhere else. Half the kids in my grade weren't my friends. They only came for the pool and the cool goodie bags my mom gave out.
Her gaze wandered to the boys behind them.
I would have rather spent the day with Hunter and Colby.
Ian looked at the harried mothers shuttling those boys to the next hole.
Parenting is an impossible job, isn't it? You can't control the way your kids interpret your choices or what they remember. You think you're doing something great, but they wish you did something different.
He could only assume she'd heard him because she kept staring into space without offering her 2 cents. Was she thinking about her own parents or about her son? Time to lighten the mood. When he teed up on the 18th hole, he exaggeratedly wiggled his hips, making her giggle.
What's the score?
She dragged her eyes away from the curve of his behind.
I'm winning.
By 1 stroke,
if he'd been keeping correct count. Not for long.
He knocked the ball, which rolled right up the ramp, to the alien monster with an orange hat, and into the hole.
Good luck beating that.
She set her ball down and took her shot, which backfired and rolled back to her feet.
Well, dang.
She picked up the ball, but instead of swinging again, she walked up the putting green and placed the ball in the hole she liked best.
Ty!
He laughed, letting that airy sensation take over again. The frustration that began his day had all but dissolved, thanks to her. Gentry's gaze wandered back to the young boys. Her peculiar smile piqued his curiosity.
You picturing Colt a decade from now?
It dawned on him then that he wouldn't know Colt at 10.
Hell, he wouldn't even know the kid at 1.
Gentry's palm cupped her cheek. Right now, he needs me for everything. When he grows up, he won't need me at all. I'm eager to see who he'll become, but I also don't want it to go too fast. A surge of emotion roughened his voice.
I don't know who he'll become either, but with you as his mom, I'm pretty sure he'll be interesting.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Her green eyes shone in the black lights.
I meant it as one.
Chapter 12.
Orgasm. According to Merriam-Webster, intense or paroxysmal excitement, especially the rapid, pleasurable release of neuromuscular tensions at the height of sexual arousal that is usually accompanied by the ejaculation of semen in the male and by vaginal contractions in the female. According to me, something long overdue, and so much better than I remember.
Gentry couldn't read Ian. Perhaps that accounted for some of his appeal. Reading men had never before presented a challenge. Pretty much all of them wanted sex, however and whenever they could get it, and with whoever was willing. They don't have to like you, or even find you pretty, a fact that had been underscored when she'd overheard high school boys' crude jokes about how all girls look the same between their legs. In her experience, guys rarely cared if you liked them much, either. In fact, given how often guys complained about girls becoming clingy, she guessed some men preferred to have sex with women who had no real interest in them whatsoever,
as long as they could fake an orgasm well.
By the age of 18, she'd adapted to these realities by keeping her heart on lockdown while enjoying the powerful pleasures of flirtation and sex. That way of life worked for her until Colt came along, until her heart had been thunderstruck with a love so vast and protective that she couldn't be bothered with lusty games and stupid men. But Ian wasn't stupid. Stubborn, perhaps, but not stupid. Not heartless, not cocky, not governed by the head between his legs. She wanted his affection, respect, and belonging, a terrifying reality because, until recently, she'd successfully avoided the pain of dashed hope where men were concerned. Romantic hope, the great destroyer of rational women. There should be a t-shirt or a mug. When they returned to her house after picking up Colt, she transferred her sleepy son to his bassinet. Sarah and Ty must have worn him out. Not that Sarah had seemed the least bit tired. Even her blouse still looked freshly pressed when handing over Colt, who'd been recently fed and changed into a clean diaper. Gratitude and annoyance wrestled in her chest like pigs in a trough. Sarah never even complained about Colt's colic. Did she have special ears that didn't hear it? Or was Sarah's heart that pure and her patience that remarkable? One benefit of her son's colic was that it stopped Hunter from keeping her there to discuss work. He'd practically shoved her out the door, wincing as Colt wailed. Last night, she'd started work on the Snapchat campaign, but then gotten invested in replying to one young single mom's blog comment, where she'd lamented her choice to be a single parent, worrying it would scar her child. Gentry identified with that fear, especially because she'd heard nothing on the search for Smith. But Ian almost had her convinced that Colt could thrive as long as he had her unconditional love, and as long as she didn't let herself get so overwhelmed that she'd wear down. She knew she'd been handling motherhood better these past weeks because of his help. Tonight, she'd have to focus on CTC. Absolutely no excuses. For now, she closed her bedroom door after settling Colt into a nap and shuffled down the hallway toward the living room. Ian stood at the wall of windows, watching the rain. The droplets sprinkled across the plate glass. Dim lighting from gray skies shrouded them in a melancholy kind of peace. She stopped to admire the lean lines of his body. No one would complain about any of his physical attributes. Sometimes his moods were black as night, but when he smiled, it was as welcome and radiant as the sun bursting through a cloud. Soon he'd be gone. She wanted to memorize each detail, like the curls of his hair against the back of his neck, or the slight bump on the bridge of his nose, or the dark hair on his calves. His tight butt was already unforgettable. She pressed her lips together to keep herself from making a wisecrack. "Thank you," she finally said. He flinched, then turned. "For what?" "For today. For the spontaneity." She stood still, hesitating to approach him. All afternoon she'd been at war with herself over this man. "I liked seeing you kick back for a while."
"It turned into a good day."
He smiled, his eyes crinkling in the corners.
Even his posture relaxed.
It seemed as if he'd let go of his early discussion with Archer, for which Gentry was both proud and grateful.
"You look peaceful now." "Can I ask one last favor?"
He shoved his hands in his pockets.
"Shoot."
"Can I snap some pictures? Not for my blog. For memories."
Memories. The word was a bitter reminder that, while she enjoyed his company, he was busy making plans for a life far away from here. If she'd hoped their single day of adventure would persuade him to change his mind, she must have been losing her own.
Ian shrugged, self-consciously. "As long as I don't have to pose."
"Hang on."
She dashed to the hall closet for her Nikon D7500 and tiptoed back to the room, hoping to catch him unaware again. She spied on him, using the large window as a mirror, while he finger-combed his wavy hair. Before he noticed her reflection, she zoomed her lens and snapped a few candids. He spun around, laughing at himself.
"No fair."
"Oh, Ian, surely you've figured out by now that I don't play fair," she teased, continuing to snap photos even as he approached her, his arms thrust forward in an attempt to block the shots and grab her camera. When he came close enough to snatch it from her, she held it high and away.
"Okay, okay, I'll stop."
He narrowed his gaze, lowering his arms like a gunman being forced to drop his weapon.
"Can I trust you?"
"At your own risk," she joked, pointing to the part of the sofa bathed in a bit of remaining daylight. "Sit in that corner of the couch, please."
While he got comfortable, she returned to the closet for her tripod and then set up her camera, focusing its lens.
"Leave room for me on your left."
She hit the self-timer and scooted across the small carpet, plopping herself beside him and leaning in. Willing the timer to slow down,
She savored the warmth of Ian's body as she pressed against him under the guise of staying within the frame.
"Say cheese!"
The flash went off, leaving her no choice but to separate.
"Don't move. Let me see how that came out."
When she viewed the photo, his face looked distorted, as if he'd been looking at her, then turned toward the camera as it shot the photo.
"Oh no, that's blurry. Try again and don't move."
She reset the timer and resumed her cozy spot beside him, this time inhaling the scent of his cotton shirt and her citrus bath soap.
When she checked on that photo, she laughed. "Can't you smile like a normal person?"
"Let me see." He motioned for the camera with his hands. "I can smile."
Naturally, she welcomed yet another chance at body contact.
When she showed him the two photos, he chuckled. "Maybe that's appropriate. Despite your earlier joke, I'm no cover model."
"You've got potential, Ian Crawford. Let's try something else."
Gentry would need to engage him to get some candid close-ups.
She twisted on the cushion while quietly adjusting the camera, preparing to aim and shoot. She couldn't help but notice his full lips through the lens. Those lips were meant for kissing, and he did that well. The memory gave her an idea.
Just before snapping the photos, she asked,
"Do you ever regret stopping our kiss?" Snap, snap, snap.
When she looked at the pictures, she burst into giggles.
"Oh my God, your face? Priceless."
Flushed, he reached for the camera, but she pulled it away, teasing. Suddenly, she was on her back, pinned down, both of them laughing and breathing a bit heavier from wrestling. Then his smile changed, softened, until a sober expression replaced the last hint of a grin. Heat lit up his eyes, but they also looked sad as he hovered over her, his weight suspended by his elbows. Her heart beat erratically, battling a rising tide of new and terrifying truths. This man might be her first genuine friend. Such a gift, yet friendship alone wouldn't satisfy the pull, the need for more. What if this could be more? What if it could be everything? Desperation pushed her to be more honest than she had ever been with any man. She let the camera slide to the ground before reaching up and touching his hair. "I know you think we're a disaster in the making, but I really like you." He clasped her wrist and brought it to his chest, flattening her palm so that she could feel his pounding heart.
"I really like you, too," came his hoarse reply. Without taking his eyes off hers, he raised her hand and kissed her wrist.
The heat from his mouth sank beneath her skin and slid through her entire body. Last time they'd been on the brink of crossing lines, she'd scared him off. Now, she willed her impulses into submission, praying that, by letting him set the pace, he wouldn't stop. The steady patter of rain against the windows created a sensual cocoon. Gentry held her breath, barely blinking for fear of missing out on the array of emotions crossing Ian's face.
"Ian," she whispered.
She knew he'd lost the battle with his conscience once he slid his arms beneath her shoulders and cupped her head, his thumb gently tracing her jawline. When she wet her lips, his gaze fell to her mouth. Like a magnet, her moistened lips pulled him closer. In the moment where they shared one breath, she closed her eyes, and then he kissed her. A warm, tender kiss that gradually roughened with the edge of desire. Still, she waited,
afraid to make a move that might send him running. "I really like you too," he'd said. Instinct caused her to wrap her legs around his hips. He tightened his hold and deepened their kiss, a low moan filling his chest. She skimmed her hands along his back and over his butt, wanting him close, wanting some part of his kindness and virtue. Her hands itched to touch his skin, but she didn't dare. She strained every urge except the one that made her hips undulate. Fortunately, Ian suffered from the same restlessness. The friction set off an explosion of tingles that fanned through her core and to her limbs over and over, each time coming a little quicker and stronger. Finally, Ian tucked his hand beneath her shirt and cupped her breast, his thumb feverishly circling her nipple. "God," he uttered before his mouth descended on her neck, leaving a warm, wet trail of kisses along the sensitive skin. His muscles were hard, his hips impatient. "I can't stop myself." "Don't." Seizing the moment, Gentry raised the hem of his shirt and gently scratched his back with her fingernails. She could feel the goosebumps rising on his skin. She nipped at his earlobe and whispered in his ear, her heart racing from the pleasure-laden sound of his heavy breath. He levered himself up long enough to remove his shirt, treating her to a close-up view of his abs and bare chest. She stroked his chest while he stared down at her, his pupils fully dilated so that his eyes no longer appeared green. Joy and panic tussled for control of her needy heart. She couldn't catch her breath. The rain now came down in sheets, pounding loud like her heart. The moment stretched until his gaze dropped to her cleavage. Then the pace of everything shifted into high gear. Within seconds, their clothes lay abandoned on the floor, their bodies fumbling around, a tangle of arms and legs, rough kisses, mumbled affections. "Condoms," she managed, barely having enough presence of mind to remember. But, unlike with Smith, she was sober and clear-headed today. He kissed her quickly, and then reached for his wallet, leaving her squirming on the sofa, wet, needy, and eager. Exposed, the one thing she swore she'd never let herself be with any man. "I really like you, too." He tore the packet open with his teeth, fitted himself, and then tugged her hand. "You on top," he commanded, removing the loosened ponytail holder from her hair so that her curls cascaded over her shoulders. "I want to see you." His husky tone conveyed deeper meaning in those words. For the first time ever, she wanted to be seen, truly seen, by a man. His hands clamped on her hips and then rose along her waist to cup her breasts. They sat face to face, kissing and fondling with the slow rise and fall of her body. In the past, she'd enjoyed games, dirty talk, props, anything to distance herself from the person, from emotion. She'd trained herself to focus squarely on physical sensations. Today, she kept her eyes open and her big mouth shut. She exposed her heart entirely, even if he didn't know it. But he might figure it out, given the tears stinging her eyes. If it were possible for Ian to be in heaven and hell at the same time, that's where he was. Gentry Cabot might be the singular, most breathtaking woman he'd ever known, let alone so intimately. He strained not to spill too early, but her dropping all pretense proved overwhelming in every way. She had a body and a mouth meant for hours and hours of pleasure. He noted each curve and freckle, the sweet floral scent of perfume, the humidity-coarsened texture of her hair. He even noted the moments of candor and surprise in her eyes, which might have been the most amazing gift of all. "More," the word repeated in his head over and over with each kiss, stroke, nip, and grind. "More, more, more." He'd lost control of himself and could hardly care less as he laid her back against the cushions, bodies now sweat-soaked, and gave over to the orgasm he could no longer hold back. Tiny aftershocks seized him while he remained buried inside her, but Gentry didn't complain about his weight or push him aside. She became uncommonly quiet, especially for her, and he wondered if she was as disoriented by what had happened as he was. The downpour outside, reminiscent of the heavy rains of springtime in Haiti, served as an unwelcome reminder of his plans, of the fact he would be leaving soon. It seemed unjust that they, two different people with very different lives, could share this kind of connection. He didn't want to give it up so soon, not when he'd finally tapped into something so exciting and unpredictable. Something unlike anything he'd shared with other women. Then a thin layer of guilt tinged the tenderness rising within him as he recalled Farah's face today. She'd broken their engagement, so he hadn't exactly betrayed her. But what of his emotions? How had he moved on so quickly to another woman? Not only by having sex, but also by caring. By being so intrigued and infatuated that he hadn't, until now, given Farah a thought. Who the hell was he becoming, and was this a better or worse version of himself? He kept his head tucked in the crook of Gentry's shoulder while he fumbled for the right thing to say. No doubt she'd been perfectly comfortable with the spontaneous sex. For him, it struck a new chord. He basked in the pleasant hum of contentment, which would be hard to surrender. The unexpected bark of Colt's fussing through the baby monitor spared them both a clumsy conversation. "Gotta work on the kid's timing," Gentry teased, and Ian both felt and saw the mask of detachment fall into place. He could kick himself. If he'd said something, anything, kind or heartfelt, she wouldn't have retreated. After everything she'd revealed today, about a lifelong sense of loneliness, she deserved more. She deserved the truth. It seemed that he, too, had a mask of sorts. Silence that he used to keep his distance. The kind of emotional distance that enabled him to keep moving from country to country, crisis to crisis. "I'll get him," Ian offered. He pulled his boxers on while enjoying the view of her naked body sprawled out on the sofa, then trotted into her room to check on Colt and collect his thoughts. As soon as he entered the room, he choked on the odor of the dirty diaper that must have awakened Colt from his nap.
"Hey, little stinker. Your mommy dodged a bullet. I think she knew it, too."
When he went to lift Colt from the bassinet, he discovered the full extent of the problem.
"Good God, man. You need new clothes, too."
He gingerly transported the poop bomb to the makeshift changing table and peeled the soiled clothes away, grabbing about 100 baby wipes. After cleaning the majority of the mess, he filled the blue plastic baby bath with warm water and gave him a quick cleaning, making sure to wash up to his neck and the back of his head. Having done this more than once, he completed the task in less than 5 minutes, which made him oddly proud. Given Ian's lifestyle, it'd be unlikely that he'd have kids, at least not for some time. Caring for Colt had given him a taste of fatherhood, and more empathy for all parents. He swaddled Colt in a towel, then brought him up to his chest and inhaled the scent of his skin. Ian would miss the mad pooper when he left. He'd miss Gentry, too. He laid Colt on the changing station again to put him in a clean diaper and pajamas. The baby monitor camera was on, though pointed at the bassinet. Gentry couldn't see him, but she'd hear anything he said.
"Okay, buddy, you're good to go. Promise me you won't do this to your mom once I leave. She's got a lot on her plate, so you have to be the man of the house and help her out however you can."
He let Colt clasp his index fingers and then moved Colt's arms like one might play with a doll. He glanced at the monitor, then cleared his throat.
"Your mom will give you an amazing adventure and a life filled with love, so you better appreciate her and love her back."
Ian avoided looking at the video monitor. Who knew what his expression might reveal? Regardless of how happy he was here with Gentry and Colt, his path had been forged already and would take him away from this home. Colt wriggled, so Ian cradled him to his chest. The kid grew a pinch every single day. Showed more spark of personality, too, exactly like his mom. He'd be a handful, but whether she knew it or not, Gentry could handle it on her own. Then again, she probably wouldn't be alone forever. Not many guys would turn her away, and if she found Smith, she could put together the family she'd always wanted. Ian would never burden her with the truth, but the idea of Colt's father taking Ian's place sent a painful jolt to his heart.
"Everything okay in here?"
Gentry stood by the door to her room, fully dressed. A pity about that.
"He's good to go."
He handed Colt to her and then bunched the soiled clothes and towel, guessing she wouldn't mention what she'd overheard.
"Straight to the wash with this."
"Thanks." She averted his gaze and nuzzled Colt. She'd never been stupid. She understood their situation and would make the best of it, as would he, without asking questions. Just as well, because he didn't have any answers.
He began his escape.
Then she said, "Ian?"
"Hmm?"
The bundle of soiled, wet clothes in his hand still stank to high heaven. She rocked her son while smiling at Ian, and a part of him wanted to walk over and hug them both.
"It's okay, you know?"
"What's okay?"
"What happened with us?
I know it doesn't mean everything or change anything, and that's okay. The fact that it meant something is enough." She kissed her son and murmured in his ear. Her courage forced him to find a little of his own.
"It definitely means something. And, in fact, kinda does change everything. Except my plans."
"Don't worry. I don't expect any promises." She kissed Colt's slobbery cheek again.
"But who knows? Maybe one day a shadow will fall across the hot dirt path you're on, and you'll find yourself staring up at me."
"In a skimpy dress and high heels, I hope."
He winked, pretending this conversation wasn't tearing little pieces from his heart.
"And a jug of clean water."
She hiked her thumb toward the window.
"Fresh from Oregon."
He chuckled softly, thinking that she could well be as life-sustaining as a jug of water under the right circumstances. He could have stood there and stared at her forever, but for the shit-stained bunch of clothes in his hand.
"I'd better deal with this, or we'll need 10 cans of Febreze."
"I'll order something for dinner."
And in a snap, it was as if the past hour hadn't happened. Instead of skipping away with relief, he felt his first step was clumsy. The second one, too. His body seemed heavy, like he'd been filled with sand. Before he became mired in self-pity, Gentry called to him,
"One last thing. While you're still here, it'd be fine with me if you wanted to sleep in my room."
Chapter 13.
Ill-timed. According to Merriam-Webster, done or happening at a time that is not good or suitable. According to me, finding Smith.
Ian's surprise drained him of color.
"Don't faint. I'm not proposing or anything. But why spend the next week or two or three denying everything we feel? I say we roll with it."
"Of course you do." His mouth twitched, as if fighting a smile.
"Come on, McJ. We had a banner day."
His blush set off a shower of tingles, but she feigned nonchalance.
"Let this run its course. What can a few more good memories hurt?"
He scratched his jaw, hesitant. Gentry had never begged a man for anything, but Ian was worth it.
"I promise I don't snore."
"I bet you hog the bed, though."
His eyes twinkled, suggesting she was close to winning him over. She cocked her hip, telling herself she looked sexy despite the fussy baby in her arms.
"You'll be so worn out, you won't even notice."
He barked a laugh.
"True enough. First things first."
Ian raised the bundle in his hand.
"I need to burn these."
He trotted to the laundry room without giving her an answer, but the gambler in her bet he'd acquiesce. She squeezed Colt and laid her cheek on his head.
"You like Ian, right?"
She remembered the live baby monitor too late. Shrugging, she made a smug but silly face in its camera, in case Ian was watching. When she didn't hear him snicker in the other room, she assumed the washing machine had his full attention.
"Let's get you a bottle, boo."
She kissed him and went to the kitchen, amazed at how bright it was now, despite the storm outside. Her house felt more like a home, a place where Colt could thrive. Ian met her in the kitchen while she mixed Colt's formula. She debated whether to press him, but her phone went off before she got up the nerve. Hunter. Shoot. If he asked for the new campaign summary, he'd be mighty unhappy. Time to own up, she supposed. She handed Colt to Ian and then walked into the living room for a bit of privacy. No need for Ian to hear how she'd been falling behind at work.
"Hey, what's up?"
She aimed for brightness.
"Are you free?"
His wary tone opened a pit in her stomach.
"Now?"
"Yes."
"Why do you sound so weird?"
Hunter paused.
"We found Smith."
"Oh."
The unexpected reply sent her stumbling into the ottoman. Shaken, she surrendered to her adrenaline rush and sank to the ground to pull herself together.
"Sis, you okay?"
"Uh-huh,"
she blinked, still somewhat stunned.
"I'll be there soon."
She hung up and flung her phone onto the couch. Covering her mouth with both hands, she gazed at a photograph of her son. Their son, hers and Smith's. Ian came into the room and stopped short upon seeing her on the ground. She must have appeared half catatonic. He rushed to her and knelt, laying Colt on the carpet.
"What happened?"
Gentry clamped down on the silent scream building in her chest.
"They found Smith. Hunter wants me to come over."
Ian's face gave nothing away. She supposed he'd seen and handled much worse chaos than the events unfolding in this living room.
"Are you okay?"
Why today, of all days? If Ian hadn't already been contemplating his retreat, The specter of Smith would surely push him away.
Defeated, she admitted.
I'm afraid.
He didn't wrap his arms around her or make promises. Instead, he reverted to typical EMT behavior, questioning her like a patient and assessing the damage.
Isn't this what you wanted?
Isn't it pretty clear that I never know what I want? She smirked.
He cleared his throat and looked at his feet before rising.
I wasn't talking about you.
She stood and reached for his hand.
Don't use Smith as a reason to backpedal from what happened today. Finding him has never been for or about me.
His eyes strayed to Colt.
You obviously liked him.
As everyone points out, I barely knew him. You're the one who encouraged me to find him.
When he sighed, she added,
I know you were right to nudge me, but it doesn't make it easier. I'm not ready. I thought I'd have more time to prepare.
He gently pulled her thumbnail from her mouth and then brushed aside some of her hair. Holding her chin, he looked into her eyes, and she wished the two of them could grab Colt and run away.
Don't panic. Finding Smith might end up being a good thing. Stay positive.
How could she stay positive if Smith's arrival hastened Ian's return to Haiti?
She almost shoved at Ian's chest in a peak of misplaced anger. How the hell had he destroyed decades of her keeping her distance in less than 3 weeks' time?
I'll stay here with Colt, Ian offered,
unaware of his precarious position.
She glanced out the windows.
Normally she could walk to Hunter's, but not in this downpour.
I'm still shaky. Can you drive me?
Sure.
When she released his hand, he reached for her waist and wrapped her in a reassuring hug. She waited for him to say something wise to make them both feel better, but he held her only for several silent seconds. He finally let go with a quick kiss to the forehead and then bent to lift Cole off the floor.
Let's go.
Within 2 minutes, they were parked in Hunter's driveway.
I feel sick.
She placed her hands on her stomach and looked over her shoulder at the car seat behind Ian. Her son's life was about to undergo a monumental change, one she couldn't predict or manage.
I've no idea how to tell Smith about Colt.
Ian turned off the engine, staring at Hunter's home.
You've never had trouble being blunt. That should help you now.
His tone stung.
Are you angry?
No. Sorry. The timing...
He shrugged and glanced at her, then reached across the seat to squeeze her hand.
Actually, maybe it's perfect timing. Before things get more blurred.
Ian.
Any hope that Smith wouldn't affect whatever they felt for each other died when she looked at his wan smile.
This is good for Colt.
He released her hand.
He's the priority, as he should be.
She couldn't argue, although she wouldn't roll over and let Ian waltz off without a fight.
That fight would have to wait until later, however, because 100 yards away was a file with Smith's name on it.
Together, she and Ian walked through the rain, like mourners at a funeral, with her clutching Colt as if monsters might pry him away. They climbed the 2 porch steps of Hunter and Sarah's craftsman-style home, which hung on the edge of the cliff above the lake. While they waited for someone to answer the door, Ian stroked Colt's head and awkwardly planted a kiss on her cheek.
I hope he's a good guy.
He could never be as good as you.
Me too.
Sarah answered the door,
wearing her cheerleader smile. Gentry knew her sister-in-law meant well, but just once she'd like to see Sarah make a mistake or be in a bad mood. Well, she'd seen that once, but only because she'd caused it by breaking her promise about the adoption. And even then, Sarah hadn't lashed out. She'd simply buried her face in Hunter's shoulder and cried until he whisked her away. Gentry brushed off that bad memory as Sarah welcomed Ian. Sarah turned to Gentry. "By the way, thanks for those gorgeous photos of Ty that you took by the lake. You have a true talent." "Thanks." Of course, that also reminded her of her gaffe with Ty and the Angel House, although thankfully her nephew hadn't had nightmares. Or none she'd been told of, anyway. Sarah then caught her lower lip beneath her front teeth.
"Hunter's waiting for you, in his office."
"Yippee!" Gentry handed Colt to Ian. Sarah patted Gentry's arm, then turned to Ian, reaching for Colt.
"Join me for a coffee and a brownie?"
"Sounds good," he said, keeping Colt to himself. Seeing him hold Colt that way made Gentry wish he were her son's father. He cast a quick glance at Gentry, but she couldn't read his sober expression. Along the route to Hunter's office, she passed through a hallway of photographs and memorabilia. A framed finger painting by Ty, Hunter and Sarah at their UC Berkeley graduation ceremony. A gorgeous wedding photo from the Sonoma vineyard where they'd been married. Her brother and his wife had a real grown-up life and family, while she straggled behind, trying to catch up after years of misspent youth, an unplanned pregnancy, and little example of how to be a good mom. She stood in the hall outside Hunter's office, hand on the wall, drawing deep breaths.
"Gentry! Is that you?" he called out, having probably heard her footsteps.
"Yep." She found her brother seated behind his massive, neat, mahogany desk. A manila envelope lay on its edge, close to the leather chair to which she gestured for her to sit.
"Would you like me to stay or go?"
She pressed her body deep into the back of the chair, her hands gripping the arms like she'd done whenever she'd been sent to the headmaster's office.
"Just tell me, good news or bad?"
He removed his glasses and set them on the desktop and then rubbed his eyes.
"I didn't look. This is your life, Gentry. You should be the first to read this. You can take it home to review privately, or open it now if you want to lean on me."
Given what had transpired with Ian, it might be more considerate to lean on Hunter.
"Thanks."
She set the paper landmine on her lap, breath held and body still, as if that would prevent its detonation. Hunter pushed back from his desk and started to rise, but she gestured for him to sit.
"Stay, please?"
"Of course."
His chair creaked as he leaned forward, hands clasped together, a study in discipline, something she should try to learn before too long. Gentry swallowed the hard lump in her throat as she slid her finger along the envelope's edge. Inside, she retrieved a one-page, single-spaced fact sheet and two photographs. She squinted at the man in the picture first, noting his glossy black hair and square jaw. A memory of Smith played, him handing her another drink and pushing a room key across the fire pit table. The smell of his cologne, suddenly sharp and vivid, filled her nostrils. She glanced at the memo, her mouth pasty and sour. Peter Smith. Peter. A prim name for a man who'd been anything but. And now she could choose to tell him
He was a father.
She kept her eyes on the photo, partly to avoid her brother's gaze. Her heart swelled with fear, pushing against her lungs to the point where it almost hurt to catch her breath. She looked up, gaze fixed on nothing in particular, unable to collect the thoughts that were buzzing around like flies at a picnic. Then she noticed the photograph of Hunter and his son, Ty, on his credenza. Father and son. Her son deserved that too, didn't he? Wasn't that the whole point of this search? She forced her eyes back to the memo and tried to concentrate on key bits of information. San Francisco. Master Sommelier. 33. Unmarried. One sister. Two nieces. Widower father. No bankruptcy. No criminal record.
Gentry?
Hunter's disembodied voice made her look up.
Well?
It's definitely him.
She studied the photo again. Handsome, as she recalled. A Justin Timberlake smile that matched the playful personality she remembered. Smith, Peter, had been like her. Laughed easily, poked fun, played. On the surface, she and Smith appeared to be as well-matched as Colby and Alec. Then Gentry thought of Ian, and her chest ached. But Ian was leaving. He'd never pretended, not for one second, that he wouldn't complete his mission in Haiti. Honestly, McJay didn't seem to want the kind of life Gentry hoped to create for herself and her son. Although Ian's influence encouraged Gentry to develop a bigger social conscience, she still wanted to enjoy her lucky accident of birth without constant guilt and disdain. She pushed the photograph and paper toward her brother. There aren't any red flags. Hunter scanned the memo.
He might know Alec.
What?
They attended the same culinary institute in New York. He's a bit younger, but they might have crossed paths.
Hunter's intense gaze switched to the photographs.
God, he looks like Colt, doesn't he?
Gentry nodded. That had not been a surprise.
Guess we know why he was in Napa.
Hunter continued talking, but Gentry wasn't listening. Peter Smith. The sommelier from San Francisco. Her mind went back to that sultry late-night summer evening in Napa. Her friend, Erica, had been struck by a migraine and gone back to their room at the Carneros Resort, but Gentry wanted to enjoy the night and another lavender lemonade cocktail at its farm restaurant. She'd taken a seat by the large fire pit in the covered outdoor area when she'd locked eyes with one of the most classically handsome men she'd ever seen. Usually, she went for guys with a little more artsy flair. More hair. Tattoos. Rebels with odd taste in clothes. But fresh off a brief relationship with a cynical hipster, something about Smith's tailored clothing and cropped hair had appealed.
You look like you need some company.
He smiled, standing by the empty chair to her left. Only if that company is fun. She sipped her second cocktail, noting the vodka buzz starting to hum in her legs. Are you fun? He gestured to the empty seat, a question in his bright blue eyes. When she nodded, he sat beside her.
My friends think so.
Are they here to vouch for you?
Not at the moment, no.
He pushed back the cuffs of his sleeves, revealing toned forearms.
Give me a few minutes to prove myself. I can't be worse company than none at all.
I don't know. I'm usually fine on my own.
Humor me and play along.
He raised his hand to call a waiter.
I'll have a smoked cherry Manhattan, and she'll have another...
Lavender lemonade, she supplied.
The waiter nodded and left them alone.
You like it sweet.
When he stretched his arms along his chair's arms, she noticed his elegant hands. Long fingers, not hairy. One silver ring on his right pinky finger, a sign of individuality amid an otherwise strictly Brooks Brothers look.
I like all kinds of things.
A sexual buzz now mingled with the alcohol.
He chuckled. What's your name, beautiful?
Beautiful. Good start.
Let's play a game. No real names. Call me Artemis.
Goddess of the hunt? He shook his head, winking.
He had really nice hands.
Call me Smith.
So, Smith, do you like other games?
Depends on what you have in mind.
Gentry leaned closer, like an old friend sharing a secret.
How about the role-playing kind?
His brows rose, and he glanced around with a nervous chuckle. He looked at her, eyes narrowed.
Am I about to be the butt of a joke?
Nope.
She raised her right hand.
I swear.
His gaze roamed her bare legs and low-cut silver shimmer dress.
Who do you want me to be?
I'm not sure yet. Any suggestions?
That night, Gentry had laughed at the absurdity of him picking such a bland nickname, having no idea it was, in fact, his name, or part of it anyway.
Gentry, Hunter said,
his tone making it clear it was at least the second time he'd tried to get her attention.
Sorry, I was just remembering.
Her cheeks warmed.
Good memories?
He seemed to be holding his breath, and she suspected he didn't want details. She couldn't lie.
Yes, actually.
Well, based on this, I don't see any reason not to contact him.
He pushed the papers aside.
When will you call him?
The reality set in.
I don't know. Maybe I'll email.
Bile surged up her throat.
God, he's going to be pretty freaked out.
What if he doesn't remember me? Hunter grimaced.
I'm sure he will. Wild one-night stands with strangers and fake names aren't exactly the kind of things guys forget.
Because you have so much experience, she replied, knowing Hunter had fallen for Sarah at 20 and never once strayed.
I know a lot of guys and hear my fair share of locker room talk. Trust me, he'll remember you.
Censure colored his tone. She thought about the afternoon and Ian's kiss. She wished this news about Smith had come tomorrow or next week or next month.
What's wrong?
Hunter came around his desk and took the chair beside her, holding her hand. He also had rather elegant hands. Maybe Smith would be reliable and strong, like her brother.
I thought you wanted this for Colt.
I do.
Despite the attraction she and Ian shared, she was the last person who'd convince him that a life here in Oregon could be as rewarding as his plans for Haiti.
Hell, she hadn't even convinced him to share her bedroom.
Talk about humbling truths. At the end of the day, she had nothing that Ian truly needed to be happy.
This is good news for Colt.
It's still scary, uncharted territory.
He released her hands.
How can I help?
You can't. It's all on me. I'll figure it out. Soon.
He rubbed her back.
It'll be okay. You don't need this guy for anything, so that's a plus. If he wants a relationship with his son, you'll be in the driver's seat. He's not on the birth certificate, and he lives hundreds of miles away.
You know it's not that simple. A moment of panic fired off another round of stomach acid.